Isn't this a sports show?
Chad, I can only imagine in response to us singing the Bananas in Pajamas theme song, said there's a reason other shows don't do it. It's a sports show. Or at least I thought it was.
Almost entirely.
Well, that was your first mistake. It's almost entirely sports.
That's the name of the show!
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Put that on my tombstone. He died with a great shirt, a great watch, and a great haircut.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
There's podcasts of this bleep everywhere.
Keep up with the show on Twitter at JB Briscoe.
There is a type of person that just loves this show. We just have to find a few of them.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. However you're getting this show. If you're listening to this show, as I assume the majority of people are currently doing, you don't know anything different. You've noticed nothing that might make you feel like there's a different atmosphere going on right now. But over on the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page, we've got a brand new stinking camera. That radio money came through. And if you go to facebook.com/ESPN Kansas City, you can see the show in, I gotta say, decent quality.
It's much better than the camera we're using for my room, which was the one we used to use for you.
But we have a Beards cam now.
I mean, we kind of did last week, but it was just my laptop camera.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is actually, like, off-center.
Yeah,
it's
this is next
else.
Level. Show the people the Beards cam.
Oh, I switched it over.
Okay, good.
Just remember, there's a delay on your end.
Sure. I see you now on the delayed version. I mean, there's a show here now. This is good. It looks good. Beards is managing it well. We're in pretty good shape here. So you can go to facebook.com/ESPN Kansas City to watch the show. And you can open up another tab, let it play in the background. If you want to listen to the show at home, you know, on your laptop or whatever, pop in the background, like it. And also, it's going to be a super easy place for us to communicate by way of comments and everything.
Or do what I do at home, where I have an extra monitor I plug my laptop in and then put
perfect.
And then put Facebook Live on perfect. One screen and then just do my other stuff on my laptop.
Absolutely perfect. All right, so today's show is going to be weird, not the usual weird. It's going to be weird because there's a lot of like serious stuff I want to talk about today and then also some really, really funny stuff. So like the Aaron Hernandez news came out a little bit ago saying that he had stage 3 CTE, which is the youngest player that's ever been identified in, which obviously adds a whole new dynamic to his story. We'll talk about that later. There's a hilarious, hilarious thing that happened in New York sports radio this morning, I think it was, that we will get to later. The beginning of this show though, that's topic two. The radio thing is topic two. But these first two pieces of delicious, delicious radio talk we're going to have right now, these are going to be an absolute microcosm of this show. Because we are going to take on the NFL and an element of their hypocrisy, and then we're going to make fun of bad radio. Like, this show, put it in a time capsule, this is what we are. Only after self-promoting ourselves to say that you can watch the show on Facebook, as if you really want to see us. But a story came out earlier today. First, Yahoo had it, then ESPN did a write-up of it. I'm going to quote some stuff from ESPN's article. That there are NFL players seeking a month dedicated to social activism. Here's a blurb of it from ESPN.com's news services. A group of four players sent the NFL a memo in August requesting league support and asking for a month to be dedicated to social activism not long after Commissioner Roger Goodell reportedly had talked to several players regarding their game day activism efforts. According to Yahoo Sports, Seattle Seahawks defensive end Michael Bennett, Philadelphia Eagles safety Malcolm Jenkins, and wide receiver Torrey Smith, and former Arizona Cardinals wide out Anquan Boldin, co-authored a 2,700-word document intended to push the NFL to honor activism in an effort, quote, similarly to what the league already implements for breast cancer awareness, honoring the military, etc. Quote, we would like November to serve as a month of unity for individual teams to engage and impact the community in their market, the memo states. The letter was prepared shortly after Goodell spoke with several players who had protested on game day before the regular season kicked off, the Yahoo report stated, citing two sources. One more quote from the letter. For us, support means bear all or part of the weight of, hold up, give assistance to, especially financially, and able to function or act. We need support, collaboration, and partnership to achieve our goal of strengthening the community, the letter stated. The response to this, as I'm sure you could imagine, was aggressive. Not necessarily from the NFL, although we have the NFL's response. We'll get to that in a second. But there, one example, a mere one example of the tweets that showed up from this said, quote, "Now this is getting stupid. Just play the damn game." Someone else's response to that tweet, I think, has a very obvious but also smart perspective on it. "So you're fine with getting rid of the national anthem and all military appreciation during a game? Have you asked J.J. Watt to shut up?" And I think with those responses in mind, you have to eventually examine the logic here. Skipping ahead to the conclusion of this mini essay that we're going to unravel, it's all about marketing. It's all it's ever been about. Military appreciation, marketing. Breast Cancer Awareness Month, marketing. Camo gloves, camo towels, camo memorabilia, marketing. Pink towels, pink gloves, pink memorabilia, marketing. The NFL's got a really great marketing team. It's going to be hard to market social activism unless you get a whole bunch of teams giving you the safest possible things to be socially active about. J.J. Watt, oh yeah, we love it. He's raising millions of dollars for flood victims. That's objectively great. And of course, that's true. Players sitting down during the national anthem because they're looking to be socially active whenever it comes to police brutality. Unjust killings of unarmed citizens. Not as easy to market because there's some tension there. And again, it's never really been about the medium as much as it's been about the content. But let's break it down. You've got the Breast Cancer Awareness Month that I think the NFL is shifting over to like an all cancer matters month. But I was having a hard time bringing all those pieces together. We should find that out next month, right? It was Pinktober. So I think next month we should either get Breast Cancer Awareness Month or All Cancer Matters Month, as I'm going to continue to call it because I think that's hilarious. So we'll find that out. And then also, the NFL these last few years has had Military Appreciation Month, the Salute to Service Month. The NFL has been paid to honor the military before games. During Military Appreciation Month, they sell the camo merch. They sell the camo towels. They have the camo gloves. They have the patches on the jerseys and the special cleats. This is how the NFL does these themed months. Now, the NFL on their website says it doesn't keep any of its proceeds from selling this camo merchandise. But the producers do. And from what I can glean from the NFL's website, the teams may also be keeping their share. It's not clear. It makes sense. It's not something that the NFL would want to be super duper clear. But I digress. It's a marketing tool. As is Pink October. Here's some snippets from an article from Vice Sports that came out just about a week ago about how the NFL's Pinktober doesn't actually do much. This is from Vice. "In the NFL's case, too, there are some clauses written in fine print. Their website claims that, at retail, 100% of the NFL's proceeds from Pink October product sales go to the American Cancer Society. But that does not mean that if you buy a $100 shoe from NFLshop.com, the American Cancer Society gets $100. If you're buying any Pinked products from the official shop, the wholesaler, distributor, and retailer gives 0% of their shares to ACS. The only portion that goes to the society is the NFL's royalty percentage from wholesale sales, which has little to do with whether you buy an $80 hoodie or a $30 cap." I add parenthetically, this appears to be right in line with what they do for Salute to Service Month, as far as how the proceeds get divvied up. chargeback device. Unlike some companies that spell out on the tag exactly what percentage of your purchase goes to charity, you have no way of knowing with the NFL-branded merchandise. In fact, the NFL's claim of 100% proceeds from auction and 100% proceeds from retail has translated, listen to this, to an average of just $1.1 million every year since they partnered with the ACS 6 years ago. That's less than 0.01% of the approximately $10 billion the league made in revenue last year, and almost five times less than what ACS's other partners, such as Walgreens, managed to donate in the same program to the same program, a program that, again, gives $0 to cancer research. That's investigative journalism on the Cancer Awareness Month, the merchandising, how the NFL's section of that pie goes to these organizations. Average $1.1 million in donations each year, less than Walgreens. You juxtapose that over to the Salute to Service Month. What are these months for? And what makes these months different than having a social activism month? Because these programs are NFL marketing tools before they're anything else. They're putting more NFL-branded merchandise in the hands and on the bodies of more women with the pink merchandise. That's a very easy Venn diagram to check out, and that's simply how it works. You can look at how the NFL markets the pink merchandise to women and to people who are more likely to buy a camouflaged arrowhead rather than a red and white arrowhead. It's also generally good for the NFL's reputation. Oh, look at this altruistic organization helping veterans and helping cancer researchers. And the reality is so much bleaker than that. So what about Social Activism Month? Josina Anderson reached out to the NFL and got a response about the memo from the four NFL players requesting the creation of Social Activism Month. Here is the statement from the NFL. Quote, Commissioner Goodell has been talking with players for some time about social justice issues and how to recognize the progress and the important work of our players in their communities across the country. Malcolm Jenkins invited the commissioner to Philadelphia a couple weeks ago to see and share in what they've been doing to impact criminal justice reform. Joined by Mr. Lurie, the commissioner spent the day, along with Malcolm and others, meeting with community leaders and representatives of law enforcement. The commissioner is grateful to our players both for sharing their experiences and their work to bring people together in their community. We look forward to continuing to work with these players on these important issues. Malcolm and the Eagles put online yesterday the below story, below link slash story slash video regarding the day in Philadelphia. There is not a response there to the creation of Social Activism Month. There's not even a clear addressing of it. Why wouldn't the NFL go in that direction? It's because it's all marketing. It's all marketing ploy. All of them. And it's much easier to market your pink merchandise, your camo merchandise, than to risk, oh no, is the Seahawks organization going to put its foot out and say, put its foot down, I guess? Put its foot down and say, hey, our cause this month is putting a stop to unjust killings done by police in our city, in our state. The NFL has a hard time selling that t-shirt.
Also, I'm sure one of those at some point would be something along the lines of domestic violence.
Yep.
Which, it's kind of a bad idea when you're trying to do that, and then you're marching out guys on pretty, I would say, a lot of teams that have been convicted.
Yeah. You can't, the Chiefs couldn't have.
Chiefs couldn't do that.
Chiefs could not have a domestic violence, a domestic abuse awareness month. Okay, they're just not going to play Tyreek Hill?
Not a good look.
Not a good look.
Nope. Market all your stars and then just right next to them, Domestic Violence Month.
Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah, it's not going to work. That's a good call, Beards. There are going to be little landmines all over the place there. What are the safest possible things to say? We're going to devote a month to selling merchandise for this cause. Oh, the military, slam dunk, and breasts. Cancer. Pink. Oh, pink. Pink is great. Let's get more pink merchandise out there. It's going to be a very safe thing for the NFL to do. Always. And now it's all cancer. Great. That makes total sense. Everybody's saying bleep cancer. Cancer sucks. Everybody's anti-cancer. And I would think that with you know, maybe some very limited exceptions, everybody's pretty much pro-military members. Like, you can definitely be like, this isn't a war we should have gotten into. This isn't a way that I would think this should be managed, etc. But no one's like, you know what? You know what I hate? Soldiers. Excuse me? No one's ever said that.
There's also not a face for cancer. Which
there might be, like, is there face cancer? Is that what your point is? That doesn't seem
like No. Like, the visual of, like, going back to the domestic violence thing, is like Greg Hardy was kind of the poster child for that for a year or two.
And then Tyreek Hill got a little bit of that action. Ezekiel Elliott now has it.
Yeah.
Is now carrying the torch.
There's not really, you know, the face of the evil face of cancer.
Right. There's not nobody was like, ooh man, this guy's super fast, but he is cancer. He gives people cancer. It's a good call.
And then, like, the social activism stuff, Kaepernick, who's not a fan, or who doesn't have a lot of fans in just the normal public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and he's kind of the face for social activism at the moment as well.
Absolutely. He absolutely is. He's not even in the league, and he still
is. Yeah, he's not in the league.
Yep. Michael Bennett is the next guy that I would think of, but
just
it's not even
Seahawks
close.
Just the Seahawks in general?
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not even close, though. It's Colin Kaepernick by 1,000 miles. A guy who, again, can't get in the league, even though we pretend the NFL is a meritocracy when it's very obviously not. Like, what the NFL has admitted over the last several months is that the NFL is more interested in its marketing face than in its actual production.
Wasn't there a player a year or two ago that he wanted to just wear the pink stuff all year?
D'Angelo Williams, D'Angelo Williams.
Like, his mom had cancer or something, and then the NFL was just like, no, you can't do that.
Yeah, breaks the uniform code. Well, and that's part of the thing. You have to look at the precedent you set. Because I'm okay with saying, listen, like, and D'Angelo Williams ended up dying like the tips of his hair pink for his mom.
That's right.
And if the NFL wants to say, well, you have to stay within the confines of this thing, that's fine because they understand they're setting up a precedent. But you set up the precedent of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Salute to Service Month. You put that precedent there. So to say, hey, what about Social Activism Month as an officially NFL ordained across the league theme month? No, thank you. Not in this league. No, thank you. Why not? Look at J.J. Watt being socially active, raising millions of dollars for Houston and for flood recovery.
That doesn't require a uniform change.
No. And boy, it wouldn't. The NFL had a bunch of teams change their profile pictures on Facebook and Twitter, saying like, we're here for Houston and we're here for Florida. A bunch of teams have had the Twitter accounts and stuff have put out, you know, here's how you can donate to the Red Cross, because that's very easy. It's a very easy cause to back. And frankly, again, I would think, if I didn't have Twitter, I would think I could come up to this microphone and go, you know what's no good? Whenever police kill people they shouldn't kill, that sucks. That should not be a thing that happens. And whenever it does happen unjustly, there should be accountability for that mistake. If it wasn't for Twitter, I would think that would be the most obvious take of all time.
Maybe like the Earth's round and not flat.
Right. Hey, listen, the Earth
again,
is round.
That's kind of become a thing now.
The Earth is a sphere. Unjust killings of unarmed citizens, that's no good. And cancer's bad. All right, cool. And also, say thank you to a soldier. Those feel like all things that could be pretty well wrapped up.
Save the whales.
Save the whales.
Go to school.
Get all that plastic out of our ocean. Uh-oh, was that too? Was that political?
Don't pollute.
Yeah, hey, guys, don't pollute. Don't flamethrow the ozone layer. Like, this is all stuff that if social media didn't exist, I would think would only be the most obvious thing of all time. So just whenever you get on Twitter, whenever you hop to your keyboard and you settle in and you go, oh, I'm going to show the NFL. This is getting stupid. Just play the damn game. If you're that guy, then you're also telling the NFL to not have the national anthem before the games, not have their military appreciation things before the games, not to have Salute to Service Month, not to have Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Just listen. I think I generally want two things. I would love for people to just like sort of think critically and be realistic. And I would love for people to be consistent. Just try to be consistent. So if you want your football players to just be football playing robots, you've also got to be done with J.J. Watt. Sorry. If you don't like Marcus Peters sitting for the national anthem because, not because of what it stands for, but if you don't like him doing that because of the fact that he's bringing a political statement during the national anthem, you've also got to be annoyed with the Cleveland Police Department who said they weren't going to show up and do the national anthem for the Browns games. You just have to be consistent. For some of you, consistency is admitting, yeah, you know what, I think Black Lives Matter is a load of bleep. Or I think police aren't the problem. You're going to have to own that. You're going to have to back that up. You're going to have to be willing to butt heads with people that are bringing their own reasons and their own lines of logic to those conversations. And I also do not say here that I respect people that have a stance that they're so convicted by, they're so tightly tied to, that they don't listen to other perspectives, or that they aren't willing to budge around a little bit as new evidence comes to them, as new perspectives are brought to them. That's not something that I respect. But if you're going to have a stance like just play the damn game, you just better be consistent about it. And if you are bumped off of your consistency because of new perspectives or new reasonings, new ways of thinking, if those bump you off your pedestal, that's a good reason to let your mindset shift. I don't want to discourage logical growth, obviously. But if you're going to say, just play the damn game, just get the national anthem out of there also, right? Get Salute to Service Month out of there. Get Cancer Awareness Month out of there. Unless you're saying, oh, this is getting stupid. I don't want to think about social issues. Specifically, I don't want to let a largely black league talk about what social issues they think are important because I don't agree with them. I don't think those are important issues because they don't affect me. I guess I would like for people to be consistent and honest. If you can be consistent and honest, then at least we don't have to jump around coded language like this is now. This is getting stupid. Just play the damn game. That's a coded indictment, because that guy wasn't here for Cancer Awareness Month. I hate that. Get that out of here. Sorry, my mother left a comment on the Facebook video and said that she didn't think it was a great analogy. People do have a problem with the cause. The cause does definitely matter here. The Cleveland Police Department did use the flag/military/national anthem to raise awareness for their cause. their cause being, I'm being repressed by these players who are kneeling during the national anthem. And again, something else that was in an editorial, I think in the Star a week or so ago, that I thought was really impactful and really good, was that the military does not have a monopoly on the flag and on the national anthem. There's a false equivalency there to say, oh, national anthem, military, flag, all one thing. Simply not true. Simply not true. If you make it that, that's on you. But I would argue that American symbolism is much, much larger than the front lines, obviously. We see that acted out in tons of ways. You don't have to be in armed combat to evoke American ideals, obviously. Now, I think a lot of the Kaepernick and the flag stuff gets pulled together by that false equivalency. And again, also, there are other people using the flag as a time. The anthem as a time to say, hey, there's a problem here. Look at this problem. Look at this problem I'm talking about. And if you're consistently more aggravated, I can't believe we're still having this conversation, but we are. In a way, I'm having this conversation with my mother, just through a satellite. If you are still aggravated, and I wasn't even going to talk about the anthem protests, this is not where this is going. If you're still aggravated by the medium of the national anthem protests, if that is still your point of aggravation, please just say honestly, you know what? I'm more annoyed by the idea of disrespecting the national anthem than I am of the idea of unarmed black men being killed unjustly by police. If you're more outraged by Marcus Peters sitting on the bench, or Colin Kaepernick taking a knee, or Michael Bennett sitting on the bench, or some of the other Seahawks raising a fist, if you're more outraged by those actions than you are by the things that they're using those actions to protest against, you're part of the problem. That's why that form of protesting exists. It says, hey, look at me. Look at me here, now. Me on the sideline of your NFL game during your national anthem. Look at this. Here's a problem that I'm trying to make you aware of. Because if Colin Kaepernick would have just stood for the anthem and would have just tweeted out some stuff, you never would have known about it. 90% of the people who know about Colin Kaepernick now wouldn't have known anything about his social activism if it was confined to his Twitter account, where you would be much more comfortable with it residing. All right, when we come back, we'll probably make fun of bad radio.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
You aren't going to get another political discussion like yesterday, are you? Maybe I will. Don't tip.
With Joshua Briscoe.
He'll do it, man. He's crazy.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back to the show. Oh, God. I think I would listen to this show if I wasn't, like, hosting it. I feel like I would listen to this. But also sometimes I don't know.
Meaning you don't listen now?
No, I mean, I feel like I would consume this if I wasn't already here for it. Also, Matthew Livingston chimed in on the Facebook Live video. Again, as always, not as always, today as especially, you can see the beautiful, crisp picture of my face. And then also occasionally the pixelated ghost of Beards McFly with our brand new webcam setup that we have. So the Facebook Live video, I would argue, looks pretty good. So you can always tweet me at JB Briscoe. You can comment on the Facebook page very, very easily. Now you go to ESPN Kansas City, Facebook.com/ESPN Kansas City. As always, if you want to hear this show by podcast or whatever, that's always available to Almost Entirely Sports. But Matthew Livingston said that there was a guy behind me at Arrowhead with a sign that said, "Peter, stop being a dumb bleep and stand up," and made sure to hold it up during the whole first made sure to hold it up for half the first quarter. However, he yelled "Home of the Chiefs" at the end. I found that quite hypocritical. That's what reasonable people do. They find something like, wait a second, that seems hypocritical. Yeah, because it is. Yeah, it's insane. it's really bonkers. And that is a good report. Thank you, Matthew, for your report back of Peters, you're being a dumb bleep sign holder guy. Also, going land of the free and the home of the
Chiefs.
We didn't even orchestrate that. That's just Beards and I are synchronizing. I wish Beards had his mic on all the time so you could hear the sounds he makes whenever I make faces. You can follow Beards on Twitter, by the way, at Beards McFly, just in case you weren't sure. He's a better producer than he is a Twitter user, but his tweets are getting better.
Right. They're infrequent.
They're infrequent, and they're usually pretty good whenever they show up. Oh, this is interesting. Reggie Ragland was a full participant today at Chiefs practice.
Reggie Ragland got hurt, did you hear?
It's not funny.
It was that one day.
Beards living in the past. All right, let's talk about something funny. This is amazing. I don't even know. Beards, can you help me set this up? Is this on the fan today in New York?
I don't know where it was originally. The guy had like an ESPN New York sticker on his laptop.
God, it's Dan LaGreca, right?
Yes.
The guy who goes off the chain here is Dan LaGreca. It's from some New York radio show, and if I could get the video to load, I would probably see the logo in the video. I don't know if it's the fan. Oh, it's from Yes. It's the Michael Kay Show. All right, here we go. There we go. It's from Yes and the Michael Kay Show. ESPN New York, it looks like 98.7 FM. LaGreca was having an unbelievable time talking about the New York Giants offensive line and how terrible it is. And he also takes issue with the way that we talk about football, offensive line performance, literally everything, including, strangely enough, geometry.
Did he have to throw the football? Come on, stop it already, right? Everybody's coming up with these, oh, well, this offensive lineman, only 27% of the time was Eli pressured from his left side on Monday nights when Sean McDonough's the announce. Stop. Stop creating some narrative that everybody knows football better than somebody else. Your eyeballs tell the story. The offensive line sucks, period. That's my stat. You want a stat? You want sabermetrics? Offensive, Don LaGreca tweeted last night or said on the Michael Kay Show, offensive line stinks. That's the stat. Give me a break. That's what we're going to do, Michael. We're going to be like accountants now in baseball. Was it the Pythagorean theorem? The Pythagorean theorem said that the Giants offensive line, that their record should be 1-1. That's the Pythagorean theorem said that the Giants offensive line, that their record should be 2-0.
When I talk Pythagorean theorem, I sound like that?
No. Oh. The people that trust the Pythagorean theorem, okay. The people that listen to the Pythagorean theorem, the people that sit there at their desk that only know the naked body through National Geographic, that do the math to come up with the Pythagorean theorem, that's what they sound like. Wow. Quit it. It's football. I've been watching it for 40 years. 40 years. That's one of the worst offensive lines I've ever seen. And they have not gone this long without scoring 20 points since 77-78 when Joe Pisarcik was their quarterback. Patterson played Joe. So take that with your Pythagorean theorem. The Joe Pisarcik theorem. You're dead.
Let's go to
Joe Pisarcik! That's the guy that I hear in my sleep, first of all, in my nightmares. It's also the guy that I hear whenever the Facebook comment pops up and says, I thought this was a sports show. Joe Pisarcik! I mean, there's so much there.
The video is even better because I'm assuming that's Michael Kay sitting there next to him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who
yeah.
is that?
I think that's Michael Kay sitting
He's
next to him.
He's just sitting there, just staring off into space.
Yeah.
Just with the worst look of, this is my show.
Yes.
I hate myself so much right now.
Oh, I read that differently. I read that being Michael Kay sitting there going, I do a lot of radio. This is going to get me through another minute and a half of it, I guess, before I eventually quit this job and go live with some sheep
he
in the mountain.
He looks so defeated.
So defeated.
It was so funny.
I mean, there's so much there. So, like, first of all, the Giants' offensive line sucking is not a stat. It's not a stat.
It is in New York.
It's not a stat. It's absolutely not a statistic. The offensive line
sucks. Sacks allowed. Giants' line sucking. That's either a one or a zero.
Right. Like, because he didn't even identify that. Identify ones or zeros. How are you going to... No.
It's either
suck.
A yes
That's
or a
stat.
No.
They suck. That's a stat. Part two. We're going to be accountants now. We're going to get there in a second.
Okay.
We're going to get
to
that.
I won't jump the gun too much.
We're going to get to that because I think there's something very important that I caught whenever I heard that part of it. We'll get that in a second. Also, it's all people, all these accountants who, by the way, this is a very good phrase, who've only seen the naked body in a National Geographic. That's...
Did he catch himself there? He was, like, going to say Playboy or something?
No, I don't think
so. He had to go,
wait
a second, I'm on radio.
No, I don't think so.
Or was he just, like, seeing red at that point and he couldn't think?
No, I think he was saying people are so nerdy that they just occasionally they see, like, oh, here's a what's the... An indigenous tribe out in Australia. Oh no, a naked body because they don't wear clothes because it's an indigenous tribe. Did I say that right?
Sounded good on my end.
All right, great. If I mess that up, tweet your angry comments at Beards McFly.
And follow me too, please.
And follow him too. So there's that, which is just a really like a very high level insult. What he wanted to say was just like, oh, all these virgin nerds. And then like maybe somewhere in him he was like, well, no, I can't say that. That's not cool. But then he pivoted it to a much better, funnier insult. Because also just like maybe he's thinking like people who don't know how to use the internet. Because like, you will accidentally find nudity on the internet. That happens like, I don't know, once every three times they open a tab. It's like, okay, box score, the NFL hates social activism, box score, that's freaking naked bodies, box score. By the way, the least true part of what I just said there was the fact that I'm apparently reading box scores all day. That's ridiculous. Facebook. Oh, someone followed me on Twitter. Oh, it's a naked body.
Weird.
That happens daily.
Weird shirt, lobster shorts.
Right, yes.
Space hoodie.
PacSun.com.
Naked body. Hair gel.
Right. But between Googling where can I get Travis Kelce's polo and...
Patrick Mahomes jersey.
Right.
Patrick Mahomes.
Between Googling...
Naked body.
Not Patrick Mahomes' naked body. That's not...
I left that to open interpretation.
I figured you did. I should have just let that sit there. Between Googling, where can I get Travis Kelce's polo? How can I get Patrick Mahomes to start sooner for the Chiefs? And can I buy ramen noodles and have them shipped to my house so I don't have to go to Walmart? Somewhere in there, I accidentally find a naked body. Anyway, that's like the third best thing from that clip. Joe Pisarczyk!
The silence at the end, though, before the other host decides to go to a call, though, is pretty
right, let's
great.
Let's go to John. Crickets, John.
It's like 6 seconds of just dead air.
It's really good.
Well, he tries to recuperate.
It was also
like, it's my turn to talk now.
It's also the best 6 seconds of that clip. But so, we haven't even touched on the Pythagorean theorem thing. Couple of things really quick before we replay a highlight. One, genuinely don't think he has any idea what the Pythagorean theorem is. Don't think he has a clue. Like, what did he think he was going to say? Like a sports statistical term? Like, do you think he was going to say we meant wins above replacement and accidentally said Pythagorean theorem? But also, listen, the way that he says it here, go ahead and play this clip.
That's the Pythagorean theorem that the Giants' offensive line that they're record breaking 2-0.
When I talked about that.
I mean, it's amazing. But you know what I think? I don't think that any of that was planned. I don't think he was going to say, oh, I'm going to talk like this. Because if you're going to be a fake smart guy, you like push your glasses up and you go, the Pythagorean theorem says, what I think happened, play the very beginning of that again.
That's the Pythagorean theorem that the Giants offensive
line. I think that as he was diving into the word Pythagorean theorem, he slipped on his own tongue so much that he was like, well, damn, I'm in for a nickel, in for a dime or whatever. You know what? All of these geeks with their Pythagorean theorem. Oh man, I gotta ride this out to going durf durf durf. By the way, that guy has made more money than I'll ever see in my entire life. Also, somebody else tweeted I saw like just a picture of him, because the face that LaGreca makes there, like his lips, each corner of his mouth is going in the exact opposite direction of the other.
And like one of his eyes is closed too.
You know what he looked like? Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen It yet, eventually in It, there's like a leper that comes out. Like that's like a zombie leper. He looked like that, but more dead. That's sports radio, man. So whenever, if you are one of the people, and by the way, I'm guessing that later on, once these podcasts go out, eventually someone's going to come in with exactly this take because they never got this far. They just heard me talking about social activism month, and they turned it off to tweet me this. But if you tweet, hey, I thought this was a sports show. If your Facebook comment is, I thought I was listening to Entirely Sports. I assume that you want to hear this.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Micah says this is a template on how to lose your show before Alex Smith loses his job.
With Joshua Briscoe.
We got time.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Josh Briscoe. It's Almost Entirely Sports. Beards McFly. The actual name is, I believe, Nathan Wilhelm, I've been told. Whatever. If this show is ever like, I was gonna say like national, I should have just said relevant. I will start a campaign to get you to legally change your name.
Baby steps.
Baby steps for sure.
First, we have to get paid.
Right. If this show is ever profitable, that as soon as we have the disposable income to pay to get your name legally changed to Beards McFly, I will volunteer to pay for it. Or at least, what's your middle name?
Curtis.
Really?
Yep.
With a K or a C?
C.
It's not a great middle name.
It's okay.
What if we change your middle name to Beards McFly? Would you be open to that?
Maybe.
Would you be open to having your like your passport and like your driver's license say Nathan Beards McFly Wilhelm?
It was almost Beards McSweater Vest.
You dodged a bullet.
I did. I really did.
McFly is a way cooler way of exploiting your beardedness. Just pick another couple pieces from that sound we played last segment, because I want to talk about something here on a large scale as we get to the end of the... Just have a couple minutes left, I know, before this hour wraps up. And the next hour, we're going to talk about Aaron Hernandez a little bit and then get into some Chiefs stuff as they get ready for the Chargers, on Sunday. But listening to this clip and then like juxtaposing that to the things that people get mad about in sports radio, like I listen to Lebatard all the time. I read tweets and comments that I get on this show whenever I see them on Twitter and Facebook and everything. Like, do you want this?
It's going to jump.
Like, do you want just like a bunch of callers split up by people who, as David put it, people who are angered by people who know math? Do you want people that go like this?
So take that with your Pythagorean theorem.
Like, is that
the Joe Pisarczyk theorem? You're dead.
Do you want the Joe Pisarczyk theorem? You're dead. Like, I really don't get it, because for as long as I've lived in Kansas City, for as long as I've been able to listen to the radio, I listen to a bunch of podcasts and stuff, but like local radio in this market's always been pretty good about that. Like, there's not a whole lot of Joe Pisarczyk, but I'm aware of it. I know there's a lot of Joe Pisarczyk all around national radio, and especially locally in other markets. And I like the idea of a show that's like socially aware and is willing to talk about kind of outside the sports stuff a little bit that impacts sports and oftentimes is directly from sports. Also, that will occasionally just make fun of like this stuff. That's the rate. That's what I like. That's what I want. That's why I like the show. We can do that. We can just kind of do it. Now, listen. Will we be unemployed a few months from now?
Definitely.
Maybe. I don't know. But I want to believe that there's a group of people that are sick of Joe Pisarcik. All right, just play it. Just play him until the hour's over. No, nothing? Fine, I'll do it. Your dad, Pythagorean theorem, Pisarcik.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City. You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I'm doing something I've never done before. I'm Googling handsome NFL quarterbacks.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Private browser.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back to Your Authority in Handsome Quarterback Rankings. Josh Briscoe, Beards McFly, they know handsome quarterbacks. Welcome back to the show. I tweeted out on Twitter, because that's retweet things, a link again to the Facebook live stream, and I said that this first hour of the show was really good. Second hour probably won't be as good, but you can still watch it. So if you're here because of that tweet, here you are, prepare to be disappointed. Also prepare to be disappointed if you thought the show was going to get chiefier right now, because it can't just quite yet. Tomorrow's going to be a full Chiefs 2 hours, so I promise we're going to get you there. If it's right now you're listening to the show on a Thursday or listening to the podcast on a Friday, just breathe a second. You're going to get plenty of... There's going to be 2 hours of Chiefs stuff tomorrow. A little bit coming later today. But something just showed up on Twitter... That is, it fits within the realm of Almost Entirely Sports in the Almost section, but it just sort of made me kind of laugh and grimace kind of at the same time. Breaking. This is from NBC Nightly News on Twitter. Breaking. Kim Jong-un responds directly to President Trump's UN speech, says the U.S. president is exhibiting, quote, mentally deranged behavior. Un says in UN speech, President Trump delivered, quote, unprecedented rude nonsense one has never heard from any of his predecessors. And listen, like, the only reason I'm bringing this up, the only thing that, like, for me is like, oh, we have to talk about this, is because whenever Kim Jong-un says that you have delivered unprecedented rude nonsense, we're in trouble, right? Like, that's not... I'm not going to take Kim Jong-un super serious. I'm not going to let him live my life for me. But if I ever got called out by Kim Jong-un for unprecedented rude nonsense, I'd probably take five. Like, well, I got to reevaluate some things, because Rocket Man, as the president has called him, is calling me out on my rude nonsense. I think that's amazing. That's all. We'll move on. Interesting. There are no... All right, we're going to talk about Aaron Hernandez, but literally just like... I just saw for the first time scans of Aaron Hernandez's brain. So... Aaron Hernandez... obviously he was the Patriots tight end. He was tied into Florida. He ended up going to jail for murder and then killed himself in jail relatively recently. And it was announced today that they found not only signs of CTE in his brain, but stage 3 CTE, which is the... it's the brain sort of degeneration that comes with taking hundreds of subconcussive hits to the head. It's not really caused by getting concussed. It's caused by lots of those small little hits. And as I understand it, it's about the brain hitting like the walls of the skull inside your head. That's why like helmets can only help so much. They can't stop your brain from moving in the fluid inside of your head. I believe that's what it is. That's how it works. I'd need a little bit of wiggle room on that because I'm not a doctor. But that's my understanding of it. And here's a little blurb. Hernandez played just 3 seasons in the NFL and 3 at the University of Florida. Yet he had, quote, stage 3 CTE usually seen in players with a median age of death of 67 years. It's a very severe form of CTE. Here from the New York Times, I'm just going to read a little bit. We're not going to put the reading from the internet drop, in case you were wondering. You didn't ask.
We're going to keep it serious.
We're going to keep it serious for this one. Yeah. We'll laugh again later. We'll play more Don McGregor later. Not right now. Aaron Hernandez, the former New England Patriots tight end who committed suicide in April while serving a life sentence for murder, was found to have a severe form of CTE, the degenerative brain disease linked to repeated head trauma that has been found in more than 100 former NFL players. Researchers who examined the brain determined it was, quote, the most severe case they had ever seen in someone of Aaron's age, said a lawyer for Hernandez in announcing the result at a news conference on Thursday. Hernandez was 27. CTE, or chronic traumatic CTE, or chronic traumatic encephalopathy, can be diagnosed only posthumously. Hernandez is the latest former NFL player to have committed suicide and then been found to have CTE, joining Dave Duerson, Junior Seau, Andre Waters, Ray Easterling, and Jovan Belcher, among others. Seau and Duerson shot themselves in the chest, apparently so that researchers would be able to examine their brain. Hernandez was found hanging in his prison cell. Seau, Duerson, and Waters are all older than 40, while Hernandez is one of the youngest former NFL players to have been found with the disease. In July, researchers at Boston University showed they had found CTE in the brains of 110 of the 111 former NFL players they had examined. Jose Baez, Hernandez's lawyer, said that Hernandez's brain showed a level of damage that was seen in players with a median age of 67 years. I don't know exactly where to go with this. I just feel like we should put it out there. Brandon Kyle, we've had on the show several times at one point today, tweeted, hey, it's okay not to have a hot take about Aaron Hernandez's brain. And I'm cool with that. I'm definitely going to ride that train. At the same time, there are a bunch of things that you can talk about in conjunction with this. I saw a couple people on Twitter, people who I like and follow and respect, saying, hey, yeah, I'm not interested in giving Aaron Hernandez any sort of benefit of the doubt. I'm not interested in blaming football. I'm not interested in blaming CTE for, in all likelihood, multiple murders. And then his own suicide. But I think you've got to be really careful with that. I really do. I don't know, this might be, and so this is Place Beards, maybe you can just sort of let me know which of these things it is. I don't know if this is me personally having these experiences or if this is a sort of cultural thing with where we're at right now culturally, but I have learned more about and seen more of mental illness in the last year of my life than the 21 before it. And I know in large part I think we're doing a better job, like culturally, of trying to squash the stigma a little bit of sort of overall mental illness. I think the next generations, I think the generation that I am in, that Beards and I are in, I think our generation is taking some very good steps, and I think we're getting closer to eradicating the response to depression, the response that is, don't think about it. Think about all the good things you have in your life. And I think we're getting closer and closer to having a full-on response of like, oh yeah, that's a chemical and then in that way physical malady. Or you would never tell someone with a broken foot to not think about the pain in their foot. So I don't know if that's just the people that I've encountered and the level of comfort of people around me over the last year or two, or if that's something that's also kind of a cultural, more large scale thing. I hope it's the latter. And I know there's also kind of a line of thinking that's like, oh, so now mental illnesses are sexy. Now it's cool to be like, oh, I'm just depressed. And man, like if that's something that you're, if you're taking that stance, you just haven't seen it. You just haven't seen it. So that's something that for me seeps into the conversation about Aaron Hernandez. It's always something that made me uncomfortable. We talked about this a little bit. I think I was doing probably Sports Sunday pretty soon after Hernandez's suicide. And I just have a really, really difficult time passing judgment very, very harshly whenever you don't know what's going on there. I also understand how that could leave a bad taste in your mouth and say, hey, Odin Lloyd, the guy that Aaron Hernandez was found guilty of killing, he didn't get a say in this. Doesn't really matter the state of Aaron Hernandez's mental health. Odin Lloyd is dead. And I understand that. It doesn't help. It doesn't make it better. It just sort of still sucks. But I think we've just got a long ways to go still. Got a long ways to go to the ends of figuring out how you handle things like this. And for the NFL, and I don't really care about the NFL. I love NFL football. I love professional football. I don't really care about the health of the NFL in this moment. But the NFL is going to have to, I would like to think, is going to have to take steps to say we have to do as much as humanly possible. And then not just the NFL, but then also the NCAA, youth football. We have to do as much as humanly possible to slow down these subconcussive hits. We have to do as much as humanly possible to have as few of our players going out with as little brain damage as possible whenever their career is over or in the middle of their career. And I know that there are some people that have kind of the moral conundrum of, hey, can I enjoy the NFL right now? I know what's happening. Now I know what's going on to these guys' brains. I know what's going to happen to their bodies whenever they're 60 and 70 years old. If you have kind of a moral dilemma watching football, I don't blame you. But it's just, I didn't expect to see that headline today about Aaron Hernandez's brain. There's a lot we don't understand. And again, I don't mean for that to sound like I'm making excuses for Aaron Hernandez killing people. Cause again, I understand what that sounds like also. I promise, I get it. And that's kind of also part of it. David tweeted in and said, it's much less satisfying to blame a complex disease than to demonize a bad person. And yeah, it's that. Like, I understand that what I'm saying is complicated and difficult and doesn't really have a conclusion to it. Like, you can't really say, well, this is the reason that this happened, therefore, this is the bad thing. It's way more complicated than that. It's way more complex. It's way harder. But there are some issues where that's just how you have to do it. And I think that's where we're at with CTE, with mental health in and out of football. Is we're in a complicated place. And I hope we're better for it on the other side of the conversation, or as the conversation goes on. And then also you have Don LaGreca. Give me 10 seconds of Pythagorean theorem.
That's the Pythagorean theorem, said that the Giants offensive line that they're record-breaking 2-0.
When I talked about
that guy's, that's your sports radio guy right now, talking about CTE and how you handle that conversation and what liberties you do and don't give for mental health problems. And you get that guy. Yeah. Yeah, that. David also asked, did you hear the Chiefs testing out a new type of helmet this season, supposedly reduces concussive hits? I have seen that. Alex Smith is wearing one. I think maybe Doug Baldwin's wearing one. I cannot remember what it's called. But if you Google it, and I know also a few of the things, they have in the shell of the helmet, they have these pillars that whenever there's an impact on the outer shell of the helmet, the pillars like bend in a way that gives more padding than other helmets would. And also it has a flexible shell. So it's sort of almost like this is not scientific. I think it's kind of like a rubberized plastic, if that makes sense. It's a more flexible plastic, at least. And it's supposed to help with some of the really high impact hits. The problem is that there's no helmet that's going to be able to reduce subconcussive hits substantially, as far as I understand. Like, because again, it's things that are happening inside the head. It's like if you put a basketball in your car, and you're driving at 80 miles an hour, and then you stomp on the brakes, the basketball is your brain, your car is the skull. The basketball is going to fly forward whenever you hit those brakes and hit the front of the car, the inside of the car on your skull. Those are the subconcussive hits. It's that happening all the time. Think about how often that happens with an offensive lineman. Every time Mitch Morse comes out of his stance and hits the nose guard in front of him or the tackle in front of him, his head's getting knocked back by the other guy's helmet. Both of those guys are whipping their heads forward and then having it hit and knocked back again. And also, Aaron Hernandez played 6 years of college plus professional football. That is not a long career. It wasn't a long life. We don't know. We don't know what causes it with effectiveness. We barely have a clue. However, in this show, we do know what the Pythagorean theorem is, so that's good. I told you today, Beards. I told you before the show that today's show is going to be weird. And it's just a lot of.
There's been a few tone changes, I've noticed.
Yes, there's been a lot of different tones here. There's the tone of like the angry, like aggressive NFL hypocrisy tone, the hilarity ensuing from Don LaGreca,
and then super serious.
Yeah, it's just because All right, here's a really, really good tweet. Then we'll come back. We'll talk about Justin Houston and Bob Sutton a little bit. We'll talk about Chiefs Chargers. We'll talk about some good stuff that isn't this. I just felt the need to talk about it. Here's a good tweet, though. Sam Farmer tweeted out, before the Chiefs game, Patriots fans told Alex Smith's dad, quote, sorry your son has to play here. After the game, he said, sorry you're leaving early. All right. Alex Smith's dad's a baller.
Is he a big baller?
God damn it, Beards. Keep your LeVar Ball basketball stuff out of here. Such a good moment right there we had with Alex Smith's dad. You mean about LeVar Ball.
It was the low-hanging fruit, but I had to swing at it. Yes, I mixed up my metaphors.
And I'm going to refrain from combining a couple because I don't want to get fired, but it's a play on the word ball.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I'll say this. I will say this confidently. This world needs more revenge pooping. And less gun violence.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad someone said it. Very brave of me.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Ah, yes. More revenge pooping, less gun violence.
The hottest of takes.
The hottest of takes. All right, pivoting over to the comments section. Matthew Livingston said that your Chiefs call during our fake national anthem was beautiful. My cousin says that I looked prettier on the older camera. Michael Dewey says he's watching live from Walla Walla, Washington, which sounds like a kid's game. Well, wasn't that? I hear it in the cadence of that Ollie Ollie Oxen Free thing, which I don't even know what that is or what that's from. I just know it's something that happened when I was little. Like, there's just a phrase that I knew for, I think it was a game. Find me the origins on Ollie Ollie Oxen Free, please, Beards. So hello to Michael out in Walla Walla, Washington. Brandon, who lives in my house with me, says, hey, if this is your Coke, vanilla Coke in the fridge, I'm taking it. It's not my vanilla Coke. Do whatever you want with it. Also, Michael Dewey and Sharon Tolbert says, my shirt, my Andy Reid shirt is nice. This is probably, since I've gotten this shirt, I've probably worn this shirt more than any other one in my wardrobe. It's very comfortable. It's light. Which I need. I need that air. I need that air circulation to get to these pits. I'm a sweaty boy. It's also Hawaiian, which I like. Fits my aesthetic. Matthew now says that he thinks that it's just him and my family watching the Facebook Live video. It's definitely not exactly true, but it's truer than I wish it was. Beards, get me the definition of Ollie Oxen Free, or the origins of it, at least, I guess.
General consensus among people who study things like this is that Ollie Oxen Free is a mutation of something like All Ye Outcome in Free. And the German Ollie Oxen Free.
Probably the second one, I would think. Sounds pretty close. What is it? Oh, it's a hide and seek thing. That's what it is.
Is that what it was from?
Yeah.
Because I remember doing something with that, too, but I couldn't remember.
Yeah, well, your parents just told you to go hide for 30 minutes because they didn't want to talk to you anymore. Sorry to be the one to break it to you. By the way, Beards, after the show, let's play hide and seek. I'll count to a million, and then you hide in somewhere in the control room, and I'll try to find you. I'll count until 3:58 tomorrow. Beard is currently looking around the control room to figure out where he could hide.
I mean, people don't come down here that often anyway, so I think just, you know, sitting in the chair would work.
This is when you put your camera on.
Oh, yeah, I can do that
and
now.
And you can sort of just, like, examine the, like, you have, like, mailboxes kind of things behind you.
Yeah, I don't think I would fit in one of those, though. They're kind
of
small.
If you took out all of the shelves, you could probably contort yourself.
There's a space underneath this other desk over here.
I'd probably find you, though.
Maybe.
What a good show.
That was a great two-minute bit.
What a... the crying Jordan meme was on Jeopardy, by the way. Did you see that?
I did see that, yeah.
It's amazing. Did the guy get it wrong?
No, he got it.
Okay, that's good.
Poor Michael.
It's very exciting.
Six rings and a meme.
All right, so let's talk about the Chiefs. This whole show is going to go up on my Chiefs podcast feed because it's got a lot of football stuff in it. Like, a lot about the NFL. I'm not going to put, like, Justin Houston's impact on the defense as the title because we're going to get to that, like, an hour and a half into the show. But this is all going to go up on the Chiefs feed, and I'm already just preparing for people to be like, this isn't a Chiefs show. Then yeah, I guess you're right. I usually try to just put the Chiefs stuff up there, but no, this has all been an NFL show. And then sports radio philosophy stuff, which I simply just want to share with more people. Is Tom Brady writing a book? I just see it on around the horn in front of me, Belichick, not interested in reading Brady's book.
Yeah, I heard
book.
Something about that. I don't know. Well, I mean, I figured that Belichick's lived enough of that where he wouldn't need to read it.
I would agree with that, except for I also would
that
think
one that, time in practice. Oh, I remember that. Maybe, I was there.
I would think maybe he would want to know if there are any stories about him. Oh, Lord. All right, I found that on Walmart.com for $20.61.
What's
it's
the title?
It's a blown-up picture of Tom Brady's face. The title is The TB12 Method, How to Achieve a Lifetime of Sustained Peak Performance. Obviously, that headline was scheduled before the Chiefs game. Am I right? Up top.
That's about as generic and boring a title as you could come
humanly
up with.
Humanly possible. Except for the TB12 thing is his logo. You know, he has it on the hat where it's a T and a B and a 1 and a 2 kind of all cluster bleeps together. Oh, but if I order it now, it's free shipping to the Walmart by my house. I haven't been to Walmart in like 2 months, and that's where I get my groceries. And I'm afraid of that, actually. I'm afraid of how few groceries I've bought so far in my life, or at least in the last 2 months. I'm probably going to pass on Tom Brady's book also, with right there with Bill Belichick. All right, Bob Sutton talked today. All the coordinators talked today. I listened to all the stuff from Matt Nagy also. He's a pretty good talker. I like listening to him talk. At the same time, like, he didn't say anything actually interesting. But Bob Sutton did. Cody asked Sutton about something we'd been talking about here on the show for the last 2 weeks, really. Which he asked Bob Sutton about why he moves Justin Houston around so much, including dropping him into coverage on a regular basis.
Well, because it's like everything, you know. There's these boxes, these nevers and always. And if he never does this or he always does that, that makes a lot of people's jobs a lot easier, you know, and that's kind of how we're set up on defense. You know, we ask guys, a lot of people, to do a lot of different jobs here. We think it helps our ability to play good team defense. It doesn't guarantee the offense, hey, this guy's rushing on every single play. So, you know, I think that's the bottom line of it. I think he's just, like I've told you many times here, underrated player as far as how good a football player he is overall. I mean, he's made some plays in the running game these first two games that are outstanding, and done a great job. He's had two or three really good coverage plays, you know. So I just think we got a really good football player that allows us some flexibility.
And there's definitely some truth in that. I get that to an extent. I get the never always thing. You don't want to have him always rushing the passer. You don't want to have him never dropping into coverage. Got it. He also has made some truly fantastic plays in the run defense through these first two games. I saw another GIF highlight of it a couple of days ago, and he just like walks back the tackle, shrugs him off, just sort of throws him to the side, dives out, grabs the legs of the running back, and the play is over. Like, really tremendous plays that he makes look very bland. And I don't want to see him taken out of the run game for the sake of getting to the quarterback constantly. However, I don't fully buy into what Bob Sutton says there. I don't think that totally works. Because I think that we've seen him in the first half of both games, especially in the first half against the Patriots and then the first half against the Eagles, I think we've seen Justin Houston drop back too much, too often. I think it's become he virtually never actually just goes at the quarterback. After the half, it's always changed. It's always been different after the half these first 2 weeks. And it's not something that I'm fully panicking about or anything, but that was kind of the crux of the show a couple days ago. Looking at the difference in the pre-halftime and post-halftime Chiefs. And for me, the concern is with Kareem Hunt and with Justin Houston on each side of the ball. I want to see Kareem Hunt get a chance to set that pace early in the game. I want to see Justin Houston get a chance to ruin Philip Rivers' day early in the game. Not end his day. but just knock him around, ruin his overall quarterbacking experience early on. Well, the Chiefs put the Chargers away. That's what I'm looking for here. And so as much as I think there is something to be said for it, you want your players to be moved around enough to we never really know what's going on. I think Vince Wilfork one time had a pick, or maybe two in New England, by dropping back into coverage after lining up in a three-point stance at the nose position. I get the impact of some versatility in there. I also don't think it's a good enough reason for not letting Justin Houston go get the quarterback. I want him to do as much as he possibly can, and he's a defensive player of the year candidate, truly, on this team. I just want to make sure he's doing all the things that he's best at, all the things that he's most effective at. That's all. But I was glad that Sutton talked about that a little bit, because it puts you into his mindset to some extent. Looking ahead to the game on Sunday, we'll talk about Chiefs-Chargers throughout all of tomorrow, essentially, here on the show from 4 to 6. But looking ahead to the game in kind of a bite-sized chunk, it's really interesting because the Chargers are essentially two field goals from being undefeated. The Chargers made their field goal against the Broncos in Denver. And the kicker was iced or whatever. They called the timeout before the kick was put into play, but he made the kick, did it again, then the Chargers blocked it. Against the Dolphins, they missed a field goal late in the game. I guess against the Broncos, it was to tie the game. So still a chance, I suppose, of that not going their direction. Against the Broncos, or against the Dolphins, just a missed field goal at the end, would have won it. The Chargers are a hair away from winning both of those two games and really dramatically changing their perception. But they lost them, and now I imagine the atmosphere in LA, or wherever most of their fans are, is a little bleaker. I'm also not particularly afraid of much of what the Chargers are going to be able to do. The guys on the defensive side of the ball that give me the most pause are Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa. Two really fantastic edge rushers. Young, accomplished, stupendous edge rushers. But I'm going to be, for this entire season, I think, I'm going to be much more concerned by teams with dominant inside presences, especially without Mitch Morse right now. Mitch Morse out, Parker Anger out. So it's Zach Fulton at center, Brian Wutzman to his left, and Laurent Duvernay-Tardif to his right. That's an interior that gives me a little bit of trouble. LDT's been great this year. No bones about it. And I think that Zach Fulton's a very good second-string center, one of the best in the league. I think he'll be just fine. And Brian Wutzman has had a lot of good moments. He's had more consistent moments than he has had super negative ones. Not terrified of him. But that's where this offensive line, I think, is most vulnerable. Mitchell Schwartz and Eric Fisher, at right and left tackle, respectively, I think are going to be equipped to handle their jobs. I also think that Andy Reid is going to be very proactive in helping out on the edges wherever that help is needed. Demetrius Harris, Ross Travis, I guess it's Ross Travis, right? Man, I haven't heard from Ross Travis in a while. Escobar definitely got cut. No, yeah, it's Ross Travis. Ross Travis is tight end 3. But for a second, it worried me. I'm definitely still a little bit worried. Chiefs depth chart. I'm like 95% sure Ross Travis is still on this team.
According to Wikipedia, he's still on the team.
According to Arletz.com, he's still on the team. Booyah! Nailed it. So with Demetrius Harris, with Ross Travis, the Chiefs are going to be able to handle the edges just fine, I believe. Does it limit what they can do with their other weapons? Sure. It takes a weapon off the field and it devotes that person to stopping a guy. But if it's Travis Kelce chipping Joey Bosa or punching Melvin Ingram in the shoulder on the way by at the beginning of his route to try to knock him off balance so Eric Fisher or Mitchell Schwartz have an easier time with those guys, then I feel pretty good about it. I'm pretty confident what they're going to be able to do there. And in the Chargers losses, we saw against Denver, they were getting shredded by Trevor Siemian. Don't start Trevor Siemian in your fantasy leagues this week. Don't do it. It's not going to be good. I think we're going to see the most Trevor Siemian-ish version of Trevor Siemian that we've seen so far this year coming up on Sunday. I think Houston's going to harass him. I think that front defensive line is going to do plenty to keep Trevor Siemian on his heels. The Chargers didn't look good in that game until later on. I think you can count on the Chargers' defense being something that Alex Smith can pick on, like Trevor Siemian did. Did I say don't start Trevor Siemian in your fantasy league this week? That wasn't helpful. That was not helpful at all. That was so wrong. So you would have, I did so little Chiefs talk all day today that eventually I just told you, I think, by context clues, that the Chiefs and Broncos are playing this week. What a fool I am. I don't even know what logic train I was following there. I was on a roll, though, man. Somewhere was like, yeah, don't start Trevor Siemian against the Chiefs this week. Wait, what? I'm an embarrassment.
Well, I mean, don't do that because they're not playing.
Definitely don't do that.
So that was good advice.
Well, I said just start. No, it's not. I said don't start Trevor Siemian. They're playing at Buffalo. Maybe do start Trevor Siemian. Let me try to say what I meant to say with all of that. Trevor Siemian looked really good against the Chargers defense. I feel good about Alex Smith being able to also look good against the Chargers defense. The Broncos defense, I thought, was pretty good. They looked good to start with the Chargers. They end up looking really good against the Cowboys. But by the end of the game, the Chargers made up some ground. The Chargers made that game close with a turnover at the end, a couple turnovers towards the end, and some more aggressive offensive play. Phillip Rivers spent most of that game looking like the most scared deep ball thrower in the AFC West, which is insane. Later on, he ended up uncorking a little bit. They beat the Broncos there. But I think if you can make Phillip Rivers afraid, like the Broncos did in week one, and sorry, I didn't see a ton of Dolphins Chargers. I was working. I'm sorry. But if you can scare Phillip Rivers a bit, like you did in week one with the Broncos, I think he's going to be plenty rattled, plenty hesitant, plenty gun-shy. Rattle him. Make him scream at the refs. Keep him on his heels. I feel good about that. I think the Chiefs are going to be able to do that just fine. It's an offensive line that the Broncos beat. I think the Chiefs have as good of a front seven as anybody. I really do. And now, whatever seven means to Bob Sutton, it's very flexible. But I think if you're bringing your three down linemen and Justin Houston, not a lot of guys in the league, not a lot of combos in the league better than Chris Jones, Benny Logan, Alan Bailey, Justin Houston. That is hard to deal with. So I think the Chiefs will get pressure on Phillip Rivers most of the day. Flip sides, again, the thing I was trying to say earlier. Trevor Siemian looked pretty good throughout most of the game at home against the Chargers. I think Alex Smith is going to be able to go into L.A., pick his spots like Trevor Siemian. He could play like Trevor Siemian and be better. Like, at his core, if you don't believe in any sort of renaissance of Alex Smith, you at least believe that he's a more evolved Trevor Siemian. You definitely buy into that. So I think Alex Smith is going to eat up on this defense. Maybe you're concerned about Keenan Allen ending up on Phillip Gaines in the slot. I would have a concern here or there, but that's maybe the only matchup that I'm worried about. Melvin Gordon's a very, very good running back, and the Chargers, I think, would be very wise to try to win this game on his back. I think they'd be very, very wise to say, we're going to just try to eat up here with Melvin Gordon and run right at D Ford. And frankly, that's something I think we will see. That's the matchup. It's kind of an unorthodox matchup to keep an eye on. But Melvin Gordon versus D Ford is going to be something that the Chiefs need to win more often than not. Because you run Melvin Gordon right at D Ford, Melvin Gordon has that advantage. So the defense is going to have to try to account for that. I wouldn't mind seeing Tano Passanio in some more obvious rushing situations. We haven't seen him on the field yet in a defensive snap so far this year, but he's a huge physical dude that I think could put his shoulder in a Melvin Gordon and slow that whole ship down. Ship with a P. Just for clarification. I'm looking forward to it, though. Also, Melvin Gordon, for a comparison here, this is amazing. I feel like he's been pretty good this year. I think he's a very exciting young running back. He has 27 carries this year. Kareem Hunt has 30. Very similar. Melvin Gordon has 67 yards in those 27 carries. And three more carries, Kareem Hunt has 229. In 72 passes, Phillip Rivers has 523 yards. In just 63 passes, Alex Smith has 619. The NFL is so bleeping weird.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Maybe you're hearing these dulcet tones for the first time because your car radio was broken and it just got stuck.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Did you see what Tom Brady said about getting sunburned?
No, I didn't. What'd he say?
This is from Deadspin. Tom Brady, the Gwyneth Paltrow of sports, has a book out now that features approximately 4 million words about water and water consumption and different types of water and how water can protect you from the sun. Brady says he drinks up to 300 ounces of water in a day, which is around 2.5 gallons of water. His bleep must be as clear as the sparkling depths of Lake Tahoe.
2.5 gallons?
But really, a bunch of water consumption for an athlete isn't all that weird. What is weird is that Brady, one, differentiates between a bunch of different types of water, two, wants you to add his quackish TB12 electrolyte drops into your drinks, and three, thinks he gets fewer sunburns because of all the water he drinks. Here's an excerpt of the book. When I was growing up and playing outside in the sun, I got sunburned a lot. I was a fair-skinned Irish boy, after all. These days, even if I get an adequate amount of sun, I won't get a sunburn, which I credit to the amount of water that I drink. I always hydrate afterward, too, to keep my skin from peeling. When I once told that to my sister, she said, "You mean I don't have to use all those moisturizers and facial products to keep my skin looking good? I should just drink as much water as you do?" I thought you should market your stupid water drop things as a beauty product. I just laughed. Also, again, Brady has in his book, a snapshot on Deadspin, has a section about tap water, distilled or filtered water, spring water, mineral water, carbonated water, and purified water.
Does it have anything about Russell Wilson's miracle bubble water?
I don't see that here.
Darn.
But I haven't purchased the book yet. It'll be here soon. And Belichick's quote on Brady's book, by the way, said, quote, "We see Tom every day. I don't really feel like I need to read a book." Is there any science behind any of this? Matt Verderam tweeted earlier that he couldn't tell. He said, "At this point, I don't know if Tom Brady is like a future living genius or if he is straight up a dope." And I get it. Ooh, also to update a previous story we've told on this show from Deadspin again. The mad pooper is not alone. Your best stories of crapping on the run. I'll just pick a couple short ones and then we'll get back to very serious Chiefs talk.
No. We got to stay in this gutter.
And we're going to stay here for a little bit. From Eric. Once, running around a large pond, that familiar feeling hit me real hard. To get out of sight line from other runners, I hopped up onto a wooded incline, but I didn't make it far before needing to release the creature.
Is that what they're calling it these days?
I squatted down, but the hill elevated my pile to a level where my low squatted self dangled into the fresh cargo.
Go on.
My friends noticed this before me. Most of these are very long stories about people who were running and they had to poop in the woods. I also, what is a, oh boy, hold on, Beards, I need you to fill this time for a second with your thoughts.
This is easily one of my favorite stories of, at least since, Terrence Howard's Terryology.
Yeah. The Brady thing is also some, like, I think we talked about it earlier, it's a similar genre. From Daniel. One time I was running while holding a corn snake, and I had to stop and poop, as we're going to say. And a mountain biker rode by and asked, as my pants were on my ankles, "Is that a corn snake?" God, really, this show has gone too many places. The story ended. If you have a good story, plop it.
I've got another one here, real quick.
Okay.
I was in college and had heard chocolate milk was a great recovery drink. Knowing I was lactose intolerant, but also understanding how much enjoyment my friends got reliving in my misfortune, I downed a full glass of choco milk. It took less than 5 minutes for me to begin violently pooping blood. I think that's a bad idea if you're lactose intolerant.
Can you imagine if someone just found this show? Here's what we did today. Listen to me. Don't say a word. Turn your mic off. Put the mic away from you. Unscrew the mic from the desk. You listen to me right now. He just turned the camera on Facebook Live to himself to shove the mic. Good work. You listen to me. Here's what we've talked about today. We took on the NFL's hypocrisy with all of their, like, themed months and why social activism month is not going to happen, but breast cancer awareness month and salute to service month are happening. We talked about the absurd things that are going on in sports talk radio and the Pythagorean theorem. We talked about Aaron Hernandez's CTE and how we talk about mental health in this current culture. Talked about the Chiefs and Justin Houston and Bob Sutton and the Chiefs Chargers game. And then we talked about pooping stories. I think this was a full-bodied show. But I would be so upset if someone just heard the last 5 minutes. If someone was just leaving work late and like, oh God, like I need to get home.
You know what I want to do? I'm going to tune into ESPN Kansas City. Sure. I bet they've got great sports stuff.
Yes, ESPN Kansas City. That sounds like a place. ESPN Kansas City sounds like a place where I could at least get a little bit of a Chiefs Chargers preview. Let's flip over to that station.
Mad Pooper.
Oh, the talking about poop. Oh, well. Back to driving in silence, I guess, because that's better.
I guess I could listen to my child screaming in the back seat for another 30 minutes.
Or you could listen to Don LaGreca. It's always an option. You can find his podcast this.
Back to the Pythagorean theorem, said there's a Giants offensive line that they're record-breaking 2-0.
When I chopped the back.
If you're unhappy with this show, there's always that guy. And not maybe not him specifically, but like that guy, like in the large scale. That exists everywhere. You can always find more of that. As I said, you know, very serious Chiefs talk here. Justin Houston to rush the passer more. That's pretty clear. All right, good work today, Beards. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.